What's up, everyone? How you guys doing? It's a good Sunday night here tonight, man. We got an awesome guest, man. He's one of the funniest on TikTok. I really enjoy him. He's a good friend of the show. And that's your favorite biker, baby. Gray's going to be on the show today. He has some fun stuff going on over there. You got to check him out. But I just had to show you some of the stuff you're going to find over on his TikTok. So again, my favorite biker over on TikTok.
Yeah, hey, this is Timmy down at the Harley shop. Yeah, you came in and looked at a bike this year and we talked. Yeah. You know, it's our end of the year savings. We got some crazy interest rates, like 1.5%, and got the regional sales managers in here. He wants to meet you personally. Says he's going to get you a good deal today. You're going to miss out on your dream bike if you don't come on down. Can I see you about 2:00? Yeah, does that sound good? Okay, we'll see you then. All right, come on in. Oh, you brought in your exclusive offer. Okay, all right. Well, let me see. All right, hey, look, I'm going to go. Is that the bike you want? Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. It's about 3:00. I've been busy all afternoon. But I sure am glad you came in. Let's go ahead and see what the boss is. Let's see what the boss is. Say we can get you on a bike today. Yeah, you ready? All right, let's look. Okay. All right. Okay. Here's what we can do for you today if you're ready. All right. If you're ready. Now we're looking at, it's your new bike. Now, for that new bike, we're not worried about the price of it right now. Let's just go ahead and find out what kind of a down payment can you handle. Now, I see you got a trade-in. Now, we've got your trade-in. You bought that 3 years ago for $35,000. We're ready to give you $15,000 today. For a trade. I mean, it's about 3 years old. Yeah, we'll give you $15,000 for it. And if you can go ahead and take care of that 10% down on the bike, we're looking at about $8,000 down and about $700 amount. Can I get you to go? Are you ready to get your new bike now? Yeah? No, that's going to be about an 18% interest rate. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You got good credit. We're looking at 17%. Yeah, you got, 17%. You ready? Get you a new Harley today? Come on, guys. Do better. I'm out.
Oh my God, that is funnier than hell, man. And that's what you're gonna find with Gray over on TikTok. He is the top of the line over on that one, man. That was funny as hell, man. I wish I could just show the whole show with that. I'm gonna bring in Mikey real quick, man, co-host of the show. What's up, man?
What's going down with everybody, my man? Hey, so this I love that we have your favorite biker on. He is the only reason why I even go on TikTok. You know, I upload and then that's it. You know, kind of thing. That's the only reason why I'm on the app is just to see his videos.
Yeah, that's true. I only go there, and everybody knows I post once in a while over there, but I go to watch his stuff.
Right.
And it's funny as hell, his characters that he has coming out.
And he's got a whole bunch of content, like whether it's not just biker related, which I love too. You know, it can be all sorts of stuff. That's kind of the stuff that we were talking about. Remember human interest and stuff like that. That's some of the things that we were even talking, me and him were talking off the camera, where people, you know, are loving the human interest aspect. So it's awesome.
Oh, they are, man. They are. And it's a good lighthearted type of deal today. We're going to be talking about, are Harley Davidson motorcycles becoming too expensive? And you know what? He did that skit and it has so much truth to it.
Yeah,
about how a Harley Davidson salesman acts. And they like they're doing you a damn favor.
Yeah, you like know? They're doing you a service by hooking you up with, you know, totally like a credit card payment worth of APR, 17%. You know, it is true. It's extremely high APR. And to me, I ask, why would you even buy a Harley new anyways now? Like,
well, especially when you pull that bike out, you're already depreciating and you're not even out the door yet.
Right. Right. Just off the lot, I believe you're 30% brand new. When you just bought it, right as you go off the lot, you depreciate 30% instantly.
Man, I'm telling you. Well, we got to get Gray in, and we also got China Dow who wants to come in and have a little chat here too. But let's get in your favorite biker first, then we'll bring her in a little bit. What's up, Gray?
Hey, what's up, guys? Man, it's good to see you.
The man of TikTok right there, man.
Let me tell you.
Hey, I try. Yeah. No, I love that y'all are doing this show. When I tuned in, I guess it was last week one morning, you guys were doing an AM and you were talking about the subject. And I said, man, I got to get in on this. And so so I actually popped in and said hi. So I appreciate the invite, guys. This would be a good show. Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you what, man. Let's you know what? Let everybody get to know you. Who is Gray? You talked about you were in the Coast Guard, and I found that fascinating. Yeah. What were you doing in the Coast Guard? Thank you for your service. And I see you haven't lost the Coast Guard. You got a pool behind you.
Yeah, no, I still swim a lot. I joined the Coast Guard. I was about 20 when I joined. That was late 90s when the internet bubble popped, if you remember, the job situation got kind of rough. And so it was peacetime. And I actually went and talked to all the branches. I did really well on my scores. And so when I went into the Coast Guard, I went in because I didn't want to be bored every day, was the honest truth. And so, in the Coast Guard, every day there was something new going on. It didn't matter what job you had, you know, if you're on a boat or on a small boat station. And so it really, the idea of learning how to save lives really turned me on, you know. And so I was, I thought it was a really righteous way to spend my time as a young man. And so, you know, I did my time with the Coast Guard. I enjoyed it, you know.
Man, yeah. You know, one thing about the Coast Guard, how did you get old? Because you're in the middle of a damn ocean here, and you got waves like 50 feet.
And oh, yeah.
I've watched one of them programs on the History Channel about how the cutters are. And they're amazing boats, man.
Well, you know, the one I was on for the longest, I spent the most time on, was the Cutter Vigilant. And it's an older boat. And they would say that they were made like a football, and it was only 210 feet long. It rode like a football, if you could imagine. And I can remember we had a helicopter pilot. We would usually have a helo on board, and that boat's so small that the officers and the enlisted men a lot of times would eat together. On the mess deck there. And so I was talking to one of the helo pilots one time, and he was an older guy, Vietnam era. This was like early 2000. And so, so he said, man, I said, well, how do you like the boat? He had just gotten there. He said, man, I did a search and rescue involved with this boat about 10 years ago, and it was a really bad storm, and we were flying next to the boat, and we could see both of the screws coming out of the water every time that the waves would get bad. And he said, I looked at my co-pilot and he said, you know, I just hope to God I can finish out my tour in the Coast Guard without getting stationed on that boat. He said, that's the worst riding boat I think I've ever seen. And he was saying this as he was sitting on our mess deck after he got stationed on that boat. But yeah, we would have to tie each other to our beds at night a lot of times during storms. We had bungee cords, and you tie each other to your beds at night so you don't fly out of the bed. You know, that's real talk, man. Those boats will stay on top of the water. I don't know how they do it, but it's not fun. It's not a smooth ride. Yeah.
So were you taking any medication to make sure you weren't thrown up? What do? They give you pills or something?
You know, a lot of the guys will take Dramamine, right? It's like a motion sickness deal. A lot of the guys will take Dramamine, and that doesn't always work. When the storms get real bad, you know, it's like when a hurricane comes, you know, out on the ocean, the waves are bad, not just for a couple of days. It's like, you know, a week, you know, of 30-foot waves and 40-foot waves. And the Coast Guard's out there in that, right? And the guys, if the Dramamine doesn't work, they'll put them on IVs, you know, to keep fluids in them. But if you get to a point where you can't hold down any food or water, you know, they'll say you're not fit for sea, you know, and your career will be pretty short. Or they'll find another job for you if you have a good rate, you know, that they can use you on land. At least that's how it used to be. You know, I don't know how it is now. I've been out for, you know, almost 20 years, but yeah, we were definitely in some really, people have no idea. They have no idea. And I used to pray a lot, and I didn't have to take the Dramamine like a lot of people. But I used to, you know, I thought it was a mind game. And believe it or not, in the, when the storms would get really, really bad, I was trained on the helm, and I actually would train other people on the helm. And so when the storms would get really, really bad, I would go up to the top of the, on the bridge, and I would relieve the helmsman, and I'd take the helm, and I would treat it like a game, like a roller coaster. And I would get my adrenaline going, and I'd be like, whoa. And I mean, they'd all call me crazy. And I'd be up there, I'd take my hat, I'd be swinging my hat, like, look at this. You know, I'd be screaming and cussing and just having a ball. And everyone on the bridge would start laughing at me. And before you knew it, and you're not thinking about getting sick anymore. You know what I mean? We turn it into a ride at Six Flags. You know what I mean? And just, it's in your head.
A never ending ride, though, but yeah.
Well, no, it doesn't. Yeah, when you get off watch, it's still happening. Yeah. You know, but no, that, you know, you, they prepare for it. That's, you know, that's their deal. Semper Paratus, always ready, you know. So, right.
Now, you know, what got you into motorcycling, and what really drew you to a Harley Davidson, and around what time period, so they know? Okay, we're used to coming up in the 1990s. It was way different than it is now as far as the dealerships are concerned, the people that work at these dealerships.
Yeah. Now, everything, you know, the shops were so much smaller back then. Most of them were like really small mom and pop shops. And maybe they would have five or six bikes on the showroom floor, at least the one out here, you know. And the garage took up most of the building, and they had a tiny little showroom. You could go into the back. The local Harley shop here in the 90s, I was good friends with the mechanics, and there was only a couple of them. I'd go into the back. I'd just walk around the counter. Go into the back, they would open the refrigerator that was back there, throw me a beer. I mean, I'd catch a beer, and I'd sit down, and they'd go, man, what do you mean? Back then, I had an old shovel head, and I'd tell them whatever it was, and I'd say, no, I'm not in no hurry, man. Y'all finish doing what you're doing. I'll pull my stuff around in a minute. And I'd pull her out, put it on the lift myself, you know, and then they'd lock it down, and whatever needed done. I'd sit there and watch them do it. And, you know, I'd sit there and drink a beer and hang out, and it was a totally, totally different deal. But no, my dad rode Harleys, you know. That's how I got into Harleys. My dad rode them. And when I was really, really little, you know, a toddler, they said that my first word was mom, right? But my second word was motorcycle, because my dad rode a motorcycle, and every day he'd come home on his motorcycle. And they would say, do you hear the motorcycle, you know? And I'd run to the door and motorcycle, you know. And so my whole life I've been attached to motorcycles. Anything with a motor that I can sit on and, you know, go fast, you know.
How do you think the culture has changed within the Harley dealerships from, like you said, from going ahead to having a beer with all the guys to what it is now?
You know, it's so commercialized now, you know. Wearing, you know, being in a club, and you know, you definitely notice a difference, you know, when you go in, the way we're treated now, the way it used to be. And, you know, I'm a tall guy. People don't realize when you're really tall, like 6'5", I can see everything in the room. And because of that, a lot of times I can pretty much hear everything in the room. People have no idea that I can hear what they're saying, you know, whenever I come in or whenever the group comes in. The level of respect is not there anymore. You know what I mean? You'll hear people snickering and making fun and talking about this and that. And the salespeople will make sly comments. They feel like they're doing you a favor. You know, they're all getting paid by the week just to be there now. You know what I mean? They get a bonus when they sell something. It's a different game than it used to be. It used to be that those dudes were in there trying to sell motorcycles to feed their families. But now they get paid to sit there and look cute. You know what I mean? None of them have grease on them anymore. They're all pretty, and they all smell good. And yeah, it's nothing like it used to be. The whole scene is different, you know.
Well, I think the environment when it was in the smaller dealerships, where you walk in there, you'd smell the gas, the rubber, and you'd actually sit down and talk to somebody that knew what they were talking about. Hell, you don't even got mechanics that work there now that know how to work on a shovel head or an iron head, you know,
an Evo alone
or Evo.
Well, you know, you see these dealerships will literally move people in. You know, I saw a dealership around here do it where they paid some guy from, you know, 300-400 miles away, relocated them to move here, set them all up to put them in the shop because he knows how to work on a specific line of engines, you know, and that's how it's gotten. And not all the Harley shops can afford to do that. Right. And so you're exactly right. You get people in there that it's. I've had some really bad experiences. I mean, we could do this show all night. I could tell you experiences I've had with dealerships that have done me wrong. But you get to where you just kind of halfway learn who you can trust, you know.
Do you think Harley Davidson lost its, vision of what its core base was?
Oh, 100%. You know, I mean, I can tell you right now, you know, they think that the only people buying the touring bikes are the old guys, right? And they say, it's the 50s guys. It's the 50s plus. But legit, man, like I've got a bunch of guys I ride with, you know, in the club that are in their 20s, early 20s, that are buying brand new road glides and brand new street glides. And they're paying obscene amounts of money for these motorcycles because they really don't know any better, you know, and they'll come to me and I'm like, man, I don't even want to ask you how much you paid for it. And they'll go, no, I really don't know, but my payments are $650 a month. You know what I mean? Wow. I'm like, well, what's the bottom line? How much are you paying? You know, I don't even remember, but it was $2,000 down at $650 a month. You know, that's all they know. Yeah, that's all they know. And you ask them how many years. Yep. You know, I'm not sure. It's like 5 or 7 or
it
eight,
might be 6, something like that. 72. Yeah,
they don't even know, man. It's the salesmen are just so smooth. They're so quick, and man, it's like they give classes on how to, you know, get over on these guys. The 50 somethings, they're smarter than that. You'll see them in there kicking the tires, talking about, man, you know, there's a dealership 500 miles from here that'll sell you that same bike for $10,000 yet. And I'm like, yeah, I do. I actually know the guy that owns that spot. I'm going to be down there in a few weeks. You know? But you know, all the older guys, that's what we're doing. We're all sitting around talking about which dealerships in the country, you know, they have what they call MSRP dealerships now. Are you hip to that? You know what I'm talking about?
I'm guessing they're going to be stuck to only that price and you can't negotiate.
Yeah, well, they go off of the actual MSRP of the motorcycle that's listed on Harley Davidson, right? So like I had a guy come into my live, my show on TikTok a couple of months ago. And he was talking about, yeah, man, I just bought my first motorcycle. I go in the morning and I signed the papers and I'll pick it up in the morning. But I was in there tonight, got everything, you know, figured out. And I said, did they let you take it home? And he's like, no, I'm having some things done to it. And I said, well, what did they sell it to you for? And he told me the number and it was obscene. And I said, just Google real quick while we're here on live, just go ahead and Google on Harley Davidson's website what the MSRP of that motorcycle is, right? He said, you got the paperwork in front of you. He goes, yeah. I said, they haven't added anything to it. You're the one adding stuff. He goes, yeah. Said, okay, all right. And he looked it up and legit, they were trying to get him for $20,000 over MSRP.
Oh,
now you buy that bike and you leave.
Wow.
And you just lost, you know, $25,000-$30,000 when you walked out the door. You know what I mean? And so he didn't buy it and he found an MSRP dealership that would sell him the same motorcycle at the actual MSRP.
Wow.
And so we've been running into that. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, man. You imagine the people are really uneducated when it comes to finance with these bikes.
Well, a lot of people just don't know what a motorcycle's worth. You know, it's like we were saying before the show, when, like, why would you, and I, you know, I don't make fun of nobody, but if you're going to commit to a big payment and you're going to spend $20,000 or $30,000 on a motorcycle, right? $25,000. Why would you buy a used one at that point? You know what I mean? Like, why not just go all the way and get the new one? But to me, to buy a used motorcycle for $20,000 is ridiculous.
That's insanity.
Just read, but that's what you go up to the Harley shop and they got them up there all day long.
They do.
And it just doesn't make sense to me. Yeah, I just don't get it at all. You know?
So we hear all the time, Gray, about how Harley-Davidson motorcycles are becoming too expensive. And before we came on, you were talking about, I remember this, when a brand new Sporty was $4,500. Why do you think there's such an increase in these motorcycles now?
Well, you know, I've given it a lot of thought, and it would just be guessing. But I can remember a time where there was a list, right? Where if you wanted a new bike, you'd be on a list. Right, you go in, you'd put your money down, or you get your finance and get everything going, and then they would tell you when your bike was coming, you know. And I bought a bike like that once, where I waited like 6 months for it to show up, and I was there when they took it out of the crate, and I was so happy. These days, I think they're just over putting people on lists, and they just jack the price up to the point where it's like a luxury item now, and you're paying for that name. You know what I mean? And so instead of worrying about, let's see how many Harleys we can put on the street, they're like, let's see how much money we can get with as few amount of motorcycles being sold as possible for whatever reason. I don't know if they have a parts shortage or, you know, a shipping issue. I don't know if it's the economy. I'm not that smart, but it just seems to me like they're not trying to sell a lot of motorcycles anymore. It just seems to me like they're trying to make them exclusive. You know?
Well, that actually came from the Harley CEO, where he wanted to just put out the CVO lines, really focus on that, and the more expensive road glides and street glides. And he's trying to mimic what they did here in Chicago in 94, like you were talking about, where you really couldn't get a damn bike unless you were on that list. And it's skyrocketed all the prices out there. I don't know if they're trying to do that again. But what I do know is, yeah, they got the name as far as, yeah, the Cadillac of the road, but the quality isn't there like it used to be.
Yeah, you know, I've been real lucky with mine. I bought a brand new street glide in 2020, and it was it wasn't the ultra class, it was just a street glide special. And I've got over 30,000 miles on it, and I haven't had any serious issues with it. I really haven't. But, you know, I mean, I take care of it. You know, I change the fluids every time the weather changes on the thing, you know. But what really gets me is, you know, the wear and tear on those things, you know, the tires alone, you know, go get a new rear tire for a street glide and have them put it on at the Harley shop, buy it there and have them put it on there. And when you get ready to leave and they try to, and they hand you a bill for almost $600, you're going to be like, this is the wrong, you gave me the wrong bill, man. This ain't for me, man. Who did this? What is happening here?
We didn't do engine work on this thing.
Did you put something in that tire I need to know about? Am I going to get pulled over on the way home? You know, what is going on? I don't get it, dude. I'll never understand why a hunk of rubber is worth that much, and I'll never understand why it's worth that much for you to put it on. It just doesn't make sense to me. But they're just getting rich up there, man. It's the corporations are running the things, and here's what's really messed up, and I know this for a fact. Some of these corporations, they got like 7 or 8 dealerships, and they know that certain dealerships are not going to make money this year. Like, they know it, and they don't care. They're going to get a tax break, and so the taxpayer is going to pay for their terrible business practices.
Yes, anytime they fail. Yes.
Yeah. And so they, you know, they'll put, you know, all their other dealerships will be doing semi good or whatever, but they'll put some of them in bad areas knowing they're going to fail. And so every time you go in there, you know, the people that run the place know. They're like, yeah, man, this place doesn't make any money. They don't expect us to make any money here. And they treat you however they want, because they know that the corporate doesn't care, because they know that the place isn't going to make any money. I mean, think about it. If you were the GM for a losing dealership that's never expected to make a dime, what kind of stress are you under at that point?
You're never under any stress. You don't have to make a quota. You don't have to make anything. You're there. You're good.
No, all the numbers are fake, right? And it's just, it's all a show. And so you can treat the customer however you want. You could burn up the whole town and get everybody on the town to put a middle finger in the air to Harley Davidson, and it doesn't matter anymore, right? Because that dealership's not supposed to make money. I mean, when you really get to looking into this, it'll hurt your feelings. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Now, China, now your favorite is my Evo.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird with you because you like the older Evo and not the CVO.
Yeah, I don't like the CVO. The seat's awful. It's terrible. I hate it. I love sitting in my throne. I'm sorry.
And that's something, Gray, that if you go into a Harley dealership now, there's usually a 10-year or newer type of deal. Anything over 10 years, they won't work on it.
Oh, yeah. They won't even work on it. And she's talking about the seat. Dude, legit. I ended up with a medical condition from riding around on one of those seats that I didn't replace, that I should have replaced, because they are so trash. Those stock seats are not built for a 50-year-old man. At all. Now, I've got one of those road lounges now, you know, and one of the brothers hooked me up with, but no, man, those stock seats, I would never try to ride on one of those again. I don't know what they make those out of. The beaver tails or something? I don't know, man.
Beaver tails.
Why do you think Harley has got away from actually hiring good mechanics now? Now they hire them out of, what is that? That UTI out in Arizona.
UTI? What the hell? That's
hey, they got medicine for that.
Yeah, I forget what it is. MIT or something? I forget. I don't
it's
know what it is.
Them but, deals, but at the
and
same
for time. UTIs, please go to your neighbor emergency room for medication.
Go to your ER.
Go to the ER. What the hell, UTI?
No, they got something at the clinic. They got something over the counter that'll clear that right up.
cranberry pills. MMI.
Is that what they call it? Yeah, I've been married for like 18 years, man. I know.
Why do you think the craft of working on a motorcycle is gone away from the dealerships, man? It used to be you had the best of the best in them dealerships.
Man, you're right too. You're right. I mean, it's, you know, it would just be speculation. I don't know what they teach those guys at MIT or at the Harley Day. I know Harley's got their own schools, right? Like spread out all over the country. I don't know how many they got, but I want to say they got one in Austin, if I'm not mistaken, down in Austin. Does that sound right? But a lot of the guys here, you know, when they go to it and they come out, they seem to be, you know, pretty on point about maintenance and stuff like that. But you know, as soon as they crack that thing open, you know, it seems like they got to get somebody else in there. You know,
well, yeah, that's the thing is they are well versed in the last 10 years, but it's like, what if anything else that's like 2010 or below, you know, like, are they able to work on any of these things?
And well, and a lot of them won't, will they? Like you were saying, a lot of them will refuse service. Yep. I've seen it happen.
We don't do it. We don't do it. Yeah. We don't touch these, you know, it's like, what do you mean you made it?
Yeah, I've been standing at the counter, you know, when somebody gets turned down and they're like, nah, man, that bike's 12 years old. We're not going to touch it.
Yep.
You definitely never saw that in the old school shops. There was always one old guy back there, right? You know, and he was just covered in grease, you know, and the sink would always be just covered in grease. There would be a big bottle of that orange stuff that would be covered in grease.
Yes. Right? And it's like salt coming out. Yeah,
it was like salt, right? And you know, anytime you go to use the head back there, you wouldn't touch the doorknob or anything. You'd use your feet because anything you touched, it would just grease all over, you know. But that old man would just be covered in it. And he knew about all the bikes, right? I mean, he would show you how to rebuild your own bike and save you money. You know, I actually, my first Harley was a shovel head. We talked about that. And the old guy that taught me how to work on my bike, he had me so prepared, man. I had like a like every little part that you might need, you know, if something, you know, if something went down on the road, like I had it all. I had an extra coil because took the points right the hell off, you know, but I had like everything I needed to get the bike going again. And I had just a tiny, tiny little tool bag and I could make that happen. I don't even carry tools anymore. I carry a screwdriver so I can get my seat off.
just that back nut. Yeah.
In case the battery goes. And have you tried to replace a battery on one of these new Harleys?
Oh my God.
It's like opening up the hood of a DeLorean. You don't even know what you're looking at. You're like, what is this?
I don't know where to start.
No, I felt so stupid the first time I changed the battery on my 2020 because I went from a 07 Softail to a 2020, right? Street Glide. And the first time I went to change the battery, I felt like a moron. I never felt so stupid. I had to get on YouTube and Google.
I was just about to say, YouTube University.
No, I had to go on YouTube. I'm like, man, what am I doing here? And even then, I was like, nah, man, that ain't right. I'm fixing to break some shit. This is going to get broke. I can already tell. And I'm going to end up kicking this motorcycle over in my garage, madder than hell, on a Saturday afternoon. So I called the old man, right? That taught me how to work on bikes years ago. And I'm like, hey, Kev, like, how the hell do I get this battery out of this son of a bitch? And he giggled for a second. He goes, you're looking at a bunch of wires with some plastic. And I go, yeah, what do I do? And he goes, well, just start pulling those wires off of that plastic. They just pop out. I said, I'm not going to break nothing. And he goes, nah, you're not going to break it. He said, if you break it, just bring it over to me. You're not going to break nothing. And I'm on the phone with him. And I'm like, all right, I'm pulling it. I don't think it's broke. I think we're good. You know, nah, dude, I was freaking out. I was like, is this happening right now? I couldn't even figure out how to change the battery. Nah, I don't even try to work on
it. Ain't that sad? We went from, you sit there and you worry about busting that crap up. I did the same thing on a new one. That's why I just, you know, stay with my old school bikes that I know how to work on now.
Yeah, but you know, you go to Harley, you bring your bike over there, or you see the mechanics working there. You don't see any mechanics over the age of 30.
Yeah, that's sad.
Very rarely.
Every dealership we visited here in Illinois, they're all under the age of 30. So it's like, how are you going to get the older bikes dealt with? Because you can't, because they're all too young.
I hate to say this, but you know, in the 90s, the guy would be on house arrest, right? And and they would make sure to hire him because he'd be at work every day. He's gonna be there every single day, and they would look for those dudes. They're like, yeah, no, he's got a thing around his ankle, but he's here every day. You know what I mean? He's fixing stuff. But no,
you know, they
won't even hire those guys anymore. You know what I mean? Those dudes can't even get a job anymore. All the ones that know how to fix the bike, they're just SOL when they get out of prison.
Well, I tell you what, Gray. And you can probably attest to this because you're my age. The Vietnam generation were the shit. They knew how to work those bikes. They knew how to chop them, make their own frames.
They
were smarter mechanically, if you ask me.
Well, you know what I'm seeing now, the younger guys that are not buying, you know, the new bikes, the new road glides and street glides, what I'm seeing is they're going back to these late 80s and early 90s models bikes. I'm seeing it, and it's because they can work on them, you know. And you're starting to see, you know, a lot of people want Dynas again, and they're like, man, if you see a Dyna, let me know, you know. But and they're making lane splitters out here, and they're doing all kinds of things with them, putting drag bars on them, and but you're starting to see the older bikes start to come back because they're more affordable. And if you know what you're doing, you can get the parts for them. You can, you know, get S&S for them if you need to. And I'm definitely seeing a lot of the older bikes getting back on the road now because the newer bikes, they've outpriced the buyers. You know?
Well, just like Angie said, Gray, they would be under 30 in the uniforms, clean as a whistle, smelling good with gel in their hair.
Exactly. You've never seen anything like it. Yeah. At the end, it's like their favorite part of the day is is when you see all of them, if you've ever been up there at the end of the day at the Harley shop and you see all the mechanics and salesmen start moving all the bikes around, and they're getting them off of the parking lot, and you start seeing them kind of zooming around like little go-karts all over. You almost got to watch where you step because these bikes, that's their favorite part of the day. It's like, hey, let's put the bikes up, you know, and put them out in the morning. And I'm pretty sure that's what they get off on, because they're, you know, there's just nothing, you know, you can tell when you go back there that there's nobody back there learning how to do a rebuild. There's nobody back there, you know, you don't see anything on the engine mounts or any jacks out there. You don't see anything going on the way you used to, you know. Every time you'd walk into one of those old Harley shops, there would be a motor on a bench getting a complete rebuild, right, with parts all the way around it. And you don't see any of that anymore. I don't even know if they know how to do that kind of stuff anymore.
No, you have to go to like a side shop for that. And that's the whole thing is, has Harley Davidson actually outpriced themselves, not only in the actual new motorcycle department, but also in labor?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're paying those mechanics very well at all, at least not out here. You know, I've actually talked to some of them. I've got a business partner, and about 4 years ago, we talked about opening an oil change shop, just strictly oil changes and tires for motorcycles, just simple service, because the Harley shop had gone up to over $100 an hour or something like that. And I asked the employees, I asked some of the mechanics, I'm like, dude, what are they paying? Like 30 bucks an hour, 40 bucks an hour, you know? And there goes, dude, no, I don't even make $15 an hour. And I'm like, you're kidding me. So they're charging us over $100 an hour and they're giving you less than 20. Is that happening right now? And he was like, yeah, man. So I told him, I was like, well, if I could convince my business partner to open a oil change and a tire shop, would you come work for me for like $30 an hour? And he was like, hell yeah, right now. I'll quit right now. We'll go to work. You know,
yes,
and
that's crazy.
Well, I could probably get a little POS shop down here that would cost me $300 or $400 a month, you know, for the rent. And put you behind the counter, or get somebody else behind the counter and put you in the shop, and only have two or three people working in there. I could probably charge, you know, 60 or 70 bucks an oil change. That's less than half of what Harley shop is charging. I could probably keep you busy all day long. We'd just make a killing. Are you down? And you know what? We almost did it, and we still might, my business partner, we're still talking about doing it and putting my name behind it with your favorite biker tire move, you know. I mean, we really are. I mean, we really are talking about it because why not? I mean, you can't get, if you get all your fluids changed, I don't know if you've done it, but just go up to the Harley shop and say, yeah, go ahead and change all the fluids. And they're going to bill you about $400. And, I mean, it's like $100 a hole. Add tax. You know what I mean? No, that's what they say too. How many holes do you want done? I'm like, did you just ask me that?
Am I standing
in a Harley shop and you asking me how many holes I want filled and done or whatever you're talking about over there? Yeah. No, I want my oil changed. I don't want you to check my oil. All right. I don't know, man. But they really do. They they ask you how many holes you want, you know, filled. And I always just kind of giggle every time they say that. And, you know, we've got guys out here. You're like, but no, you know, we've got guys in the club that when I need an oil change or something, I got guys that could use the money, and I'm like, hey man, you know, I've gotten to a point where I would rather help a brother out and be like, man, you want to make 50 bucks? Go pick up an oil change kit for me and come on over here and change my oil for me. You know what I mean? I don't go to the Harley shop hardly at all for that kind of stuff anymore. It's just ridiculous.
I've noticed the Harley dealers around here that you like, as a customer, you have no access to where the mechanics are anymore. Like they don't want nobody in that room.
No, they say
it's for liability reasons, right?
Yes, liability. It's a liability
that's what they say.
Someone's going to sue.
You could go back there anytime you wanted.
Oh, there was lawn chairs. There was lawn chairs next to the bike lifts, and we all, like we were talking, we sit back there and drink a cold beer, and the dude working on the bike, but at some point we'll be like, man, y'all quit handing me beer. I got to figure this shit out. Let nobody give me another beer.
I've got to fix this. I don't know what's up.
Times I went with Hollywood to back in the early 90s, late 90s, to the dealerships or even the mom and pop places, and you'd see those white plastic lawn chairs.
Yeah. Hey, the ones at our Harley shop were the aluminum frames with the little net. You know what I mean? Had the, you know, the ones from the 80s. It had the net in there. But, you know, there was certain chairs that the big guys couldn't sit in, and they'd try to sit in it. You go, don't sit there. Don't do that. But, no, we all would hang out. It was a party. And you'd get up to the Harley shop. Your guys would call you and go, man, you out riding? Yeah, man, dude, my coil broke or whatever. My Bendix went out. I'm up here at the Harley shop getting my stuff fixed. You want to come up here and hang out? And they'd be like, yeah, no, I'll grab a six pack, you know, and we would all be back in the garage, you know, hanging out. And, you know, people would be like, dude, don't light that in here. Get out of my shop with that. There's customers that come in here. Yeah, but it was a party. It was a party, you know, and it's not like that anymore. Everything's changed.
Now we're closed.
Now they'll get fired for having a beer on shift.
Oh, I couldn't even imagine. You imagine the lawsuits they'd open themselves up to? Yeah. But, you know, the old school guys, and the way I was taught, right, the way I was taught by the guys when I was prospecting, literally, you know, 20 years ago, they would say, don't ever let anybody work on your bike without you sitting there watching. You know, if anybody works on your bike, you need to be sitting right there the whole time, because that's your life that they have, you know, in their hands. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I've always been. And I have a real hard time every time my bike goes through those glass doors and I can't see it anymore. I really do. It's like I get anxious, and I find myself standing at the glass doors like an expecting father. You know what I mean? I'm like looking over the glass. I'm like, got my hands up there. I'm like, can you see her in the back? I see her. She's back there. She's good. No, she's good. No, they're giving her a bath now. They're going to bring her out pretty soon. You know, it's totally different now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but how sad is that when you do mention that the mechanics are good at the maintenance stuff, but they can't crack an engine, put in a cam, or any of that?
Nah, man. When you start asking them to do that, your bike's going to be there for a long time. You know, they almost every time. You know, and they'll tell you it'll be up here for a week. Come pick it up Tuesday, and you'll come up there Tuesday with bells on. You know, like, hey, y'all ready? And like, oh no, dude, your part's not here.
We haven't even started.
It's on back order from China, is what they always say. It's on back order from China. And we hope that it'll be here next week, you know, and then you go and ask someone in the back, you're like, are they working on my bike yet? I was like, well, you know, they haven't actually started because the parts aren't here from China yet. And so, they're like, oh, no kidding. So it's just sitting right there chilling, huh? Yeah, right. I mean, no, it's all everything. You know, used to, they kept all that on hand. You would even see, you know, the mechanic in the back fixing parts and making them work again, you know, and be like, hey, man, we can fix this Bendix, dude. I can rebuild this Bendix. We can make it work again, you know. And but none of that happens anymore. Yeah.
I'd like to see these younger mechanics work on carburetors. I don't know why.
Right. 2007 was when it all changed for us, you know. 2007.
I mean, I'm picturing back in the day when, like, Hollywood had his 77 Bonneville Triumph.
Triumph Bonneville.
Yeah.
Nice. And nice.
We to a mom and pop joint because it was carb. It was kickstart. It was the whole shebang.
Yeah.
And the one guy there actually looked at him and goes, do you got the manual for this thing?
That's awesome.
Tell me about something. Tell me about something.
Yeah. And if it is, it's a thick book here.
I love those old Triumphs. You know, that's an affordable. Excuse me. That's an affordable bike. Have you looked at the new prices on the Triumph? Have you looked at? I mean, it's. I want to say you can get a brand new Triumph for less than $15. And you know, they don't have a whole lot of bikes on their line, but last time I looked, it was really close to 15,000 for a brand new bike, you know.
Yeah, and Triumphs are badass bikes, man. I still
love them.
today.
Yeah, those are great.
A lot of the old timers, a lot of these kids don't understand that it used to be about Nordens, Triumphs, Harleys.
That's right.
You know, anything that wasn't Jap, man. You know, we used to go into a party, man, on the weekend. You'd see a Honda hanging. Now they'd have a heart attack seeing that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and you see a lot of clubs now that are, you see Hondas, you know, riding down the road. It's getting more and more
Honda
common.
Honda Davidson.
Yeah. And they'll tell you, oh, man, you can't even tell it's not a Harley. They'll say, hey, when I pull up to the bar, women come outside and go, I sure do like your hog. And you know what they'll do? They'll say, thank you, baby. And they won't tell you it's a Honda or a Victory or whatever it is. Like, hey, thank you, baby. You want to go for a ride? You know, I guess it's like that next morning thing. They don't know until they see it in the sunlight, you know, doing the walk of shame. And they're like, oh, my God, what is that? It's a Victory. I was on a Honda all night. I thought it was a Harley. That's like women wearing Victoria's Secret, right? And you get them home and you're like, hang on, that's not what I was looking at all night long. That's what is happening here. It's like the Honda Secret.
Could you imagine the guys that taught us, if somebody went up to them and said, well, it has two wheels, you know, it don't matter if it's a Harley. Dude, they would have knocked you out.
Oh, man. You know, when I was in the service, when I was in the Coast Guard, I was stationed at Cocoa Beach for a while. And I went down to Daytona, right, for bike week. And I'll never forget it as long as I live. I went down there, and I'm not going to say what club it was, but there was a certain club that was kind of known, you know, for running the thing back then. And so I saw all these guys lined up, and I'm like, shit, I'm going to go in and say hi, you know. And as I'm walking up, this big old bear of a man, right? He walks outside and he's got this kid with him, right? And there's like, I say a kid, and the guy's like, you know, 22 years old. And he's walking out with this really young guy and he's talking to him pretty stern. And they walk over to this sport bike, you know, back then they called them rice burners, you know?
Yep.
And walked over to this sport bike and he goes, so this is your rice burner, huh? And the guy's like, yeah. And he goes, well, we don't let rice burners down here in Daytona during bike week. I'm going to need you to go ahead and get the hell out of here. You know, and the dude was like, are you kidding me? And the guy kicked his bike over, like right there. Boom. Oh, he's like, wow. Nah, 19. Oh, yeah, dude just kicked it over. It hit the ground like plastic popped everywhere. And I'm standing there like, oh, that happened. You know, and so at this point, there's a little bit of a crowd because of the smash, you know.
No cell phones back then, though.
No, this was like 1999, you know. And so we're standing out there, and the kid, you know, he picks his bike up, and, you know, there's a bunch of dudes, and he picks his bike up, gets on his bike, and he goes down the road, and he didn't even get out of sight. He pulled into another bar. And the guys were like, no, he did not. And I just was like, oh, I don't even want to see this. I don't even want to know. And so I went back into the bar. I'm like, nah, I'm going. So I went into the bar and I'm like hanging out. And then I saw that same kid go back by the bar about 20 minutes later. And the other side of the bike was wrecked. I'm like, oh, shit. Well, they're serious. Don't bring your rice burners to Daytona. They're not trying to hear it out here. You know what I mean? But that was how things were back then. You just don't come in here trying to pretend like you're hanging out with the big dogs, you know, on your rice burner. This is not Weekend Warrior Week. But now it's different. Everything's different. We keep saying that, but it really is
different. You put
now Mike, you go and that's all you see. Yeah.
You put Mike Ball into our time period, he'd probably be flabbergasted. He wouldn't even know what to think.
I don't know about that.
I got beat up a lot learning all the lessons I learned. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, and most of us did, you know. Out here in Texas, there's a lot of fist fighting and all that. And like you say, the old guys, if they saw you, you know, acting a certain way or something, or you saying something that they didn't like, they really would just walk over and knock the hell out of you. You know, or they call you out back, you know, if you were lucky, and they say, come on, young man, let's go out back, you know,
take a walk.
And you'd go out back and they'd let you try to fight back. But you know, the dude, you know, he did 15 years, you know, down in Cummings and got a head like a cinder block. You know what I mean? 6'6", you know, and he does this for fun, you know, and he'll be at work in the morning. You might not, but, you know what I mean? And that really was, that's exactly how it was, you know? And, you get out there and they would say, all right, new guy, you know, 0-0, you know, and then they would go, Billy Bob, 32-3. this is what we're doing, huh? Yeah. And just beat the hell out of you. that was entertainment at the clubhouse, you know, it really was. And you'd go out in the backyard and there'd be a good fist fight. And, you know, everybody kind of bet on who's going to win. And everybody shake hands when it was over with. You know what I mean?
It was fun back then. It really was.
It was, you know. You get your nose broke a few times and then you're not so quick to run out there. You're like, you know what? I actually want to have a good time when I get home tonight. And
You remember the old prospect pulls, man? They put you on a freaking shovel and just go. Remember that?
Oh, man. You know what? You talking about dragging people behind the bike?
Yeah. With the steel shovel.
Next slide.
Yeah, with the steel shovel. You know, we used to do all kinds of stuff, man. I can remember I took a couple of swimming pools one time. You know, the little plastic ones like you buy for your dog? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I got like two of them and stacked them on top of each other and ran a line through them and tied it to the bike and drug the kids around all afternoon. You know what I mean? I just loved it. You know, like all the kids were like, me next. And we were slinging around like they were on a, you know, like a tube behind a boat, you know, They'd roll and they'd get up and go, oh, that was great. I'd do it again. You know, the kids were tougher. You know, it is what it is.
Now these so-called bikers would be out there. Oh my God, look what they're doing.
Oh yeah. No, they'd call CPS.
Yep, CPS would be called and use some recordings.
They're dragging kids behind motorcycles.
You're going to be recording the whole thing.
That's exactly right. But yeah, man, we used to have a ball doing all that kind of stuff. You know, a lot of those contests they quit doing for one reason or another. When was the last time you even saw a good hot dog bike? You know what I mean?
Last year at the Midwest Bike Show.
But that's right. That's ran by a club, but we had some mini bike joustings. I got challenged. I'm taking that up next year.
He's going to be doing the mini bike challenge this year.
That looks fun. I don't know if I would want to do it, but I would watch you do it.
I'm totally going to videotape it.
I'm gonna get ass kicked by Captain Overlord.
Oh, you already know who you're going against?
Oh yeah.
Oh, y'all got this planned out. Oh, okay. All right. No, you gotta make sure your video and I stick it all over.
A year in advance.
I'm getting that.
Yeah, no. Now where is it gonna be? Hell, I might just show up for that one. All right. You know what I mean?
Get you out there, man. You'd have a ball at the Midwest Chopper Fest, man.
Yeah? Is that Ohio or
no, it's in Wisconsin. It's an old-ass school and a compound. You know what I'm talking about. Real good guys. Yeah, it's a old-school time, man, like 1980s, 1970s type of party.
That'd be right up my alley.
They actually already have the date prepared for it. It's going to be Saturday, July 13th, 2024, at noon.
You just stay at my place, man. You got to get up here.
You know what? I mean, you know, there's some dude in Wisconsin that just put a restraining order on me. So, you know.
I saw that.
I've never been to Wisconsin though. But I'm pretty sure I'm gonna have a restraining order.
How does that work?
I think he actually has to get a judge. So this dude started an account. You know, you get a lot of this when your account gets big. People will start accounts using your name, your material, things like just to get their numbers up or whatever, right? And so this guy did that to me, and for over a year, he's been just trashing me, just making fun of me and trashing me and all that. And so this year, my followers went after him. You know, they just sending me all these messages. And they're like, man, we're going to report his account. This is getting to the point of ridiculous. So he lost his account. And then he got mad at me. So we started having a little, you know, turf, you know, whatever, a little feud on TikTok. And it's kind of funny. It's like, it's kind of funny because, like, because I've never really done that kind of girl stuff before. You know what I mean? And it's like, right. And it's like, he lost his account and I got all his followers, and that's how it works. So then I went ahead and went after a couple of other people that were hating on me, right? And then they lost their accounts and I got their followers. It's like a big game over there. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I got like 40,000 followers in a couple of weeks just by responding to this guy. And so I just kind of went with it, right? But now he's filed for a restraining order because I guess I heard his B-wins.
Yeah, he took down his account, and now he's...
So talking about TikTok, how are you able... Because it's like a cesspool of hate over there, man.
Yeah,
oh, it is. No, it really is. It's so toxic. Well, again, it's like an echo chamber, what we were talking about. When you understand the algorithm. And I've had to do a lot of different tricks, but... Like we were talking about earlier, changing up your content and trying to be more relatable and things like that. That'll introduce you to different audiences and help you to get your numbers up and get things going. And at this point, I put up with it because they pay me to. I mean, they do. I'm a professional at it at this point. And every single day I get hit up by probably, you know, 5 to 20 companies, you know, probably a minimum of half a dozen companies every day that want me to collaborate with them and do commercials and things like that. And it's actually overwhelming. And I go through there and try to kind of pick what I want to do and this and that. But the only reason I put up with it is because I get paid to do it. And I have a lot of followers that seem to really enjoy the content. I've had people that suffer depression and things like that that have hit me up and told me, you know, how much they appreciate certain content that I put out. And so sometimes you feel like you're making a difference, and it makes it, and that helps make it, you know, worthwhile also. And my DM box is full of positive comments and people that love the content and people that, you know, that have nothing but awesome, you know, great things to say. And so, you know, that it balances out. It really did. I get a lot of haters. Yeah, I get a lot of haters, but I get a lot of people. It's, you know, I do subscribers now. And I've got it set up now where if you want to come into my live show and talk trash to me, you literally have to pay. and I think that's so great. And so I don't get a whole lot of it. Most of the people that subscribe, they just have good things to say. And so I have kind of filtered out a lot of the negativity by only allowing my subscribers access to my comment sections and to my feed. But, you know, I didn't do that until I got to over 300,000 followers. But then I kind of locked it down, and that filters out a lot of the hate also. And a lot of people, when they realize that they can't comment and they can't say hateful things anymore, a lot of the trolls just kind of move on, you know. You'll get some of the persistent ones that will keep on, and I've gotten to where now, you know, I make up songs about them and shit. You know, I've got one little old lady up in Wisconsin that can't wait to see me. She's about 75. She thinks I'm hot. You know, right here, she's got a lot of land, and I like to hunt. You know what I mean? And so I was telling her, I'm like, baby, if you let me put some decoys on the back 40, you know what I mean, put some feeders on the front 10, baby, I'll do whatever you want. I hear you got some good, you know, peach pie over there, or you got some cobbler. I don't care what it looks like. I'll eat it, you know. It's fine. Can I hunt? You know, we can spotlight pigs all night long. Do they got pigs in Wisconsin? I don't know.
But, bears.
Yeah, bears. Bears. I've never hunted bear before. I think, see, you got to be tough. That's the kind of, I don't even know about that, man. You know, I'm a good shot, but could you imagine pissing off a bear I couldn't even imagine. Anybody out there hunting bears, I hope you got a bunch of people with you. You know what I mean?
Or an AK-47 or something.
Do that AK and then like seven, at minimum, 8 rounds of
buck. Do they really hunt bears up there? I'm being sincere. Do they hunt bears up there?
Yeah, I think so.
Where our daughter's at, way up north, they actually have a week out of the year where they officially hunt black bear.
Yeah,
it's not the
They're trying to lessen the amount of bears.
Population. Yeah,
it's the north.
Up in the north woods.
Yeah, you know, Texas used to be full of black bears, but they're not here anymore. There's something about Texans. We didn't put up with that shit.
You guys got a lot of guns, though.
We got them out. We ran them all out of the state. There's a few of them in Arkansas, you know.
The problem with Texas now is you actually got a wild boar problem, don't you?
No, the boars are getting real bad. And believe it or not, the bears are coming back. I was being funny. The bears are coming back because of the pigs. Yeah, so they actually have a new wolf, believe it or not. I read a lot. There's a new wolf. You know, I'm an outdoorsman, but there's a new hybrid red wolf that's moving up from the coast. And people are saying, a lot of the, you know, people I'm talking to with A&M out at the university, they're saying that the pigs are bringing in predator species that haven't been around here for a long time. And so we might actually start seeing bears and wolves again out in East Texas. Pigs are, you know, it's terrible.
Yeah. Now, I'm telling you what, Texas is a different type of place, man. I remember going, I think it was 92 on my first honeymoon. We went to Arlington. It was the most beautiful place I've ever been. Right
in there, the 90s.
Yeah, between Fort Worth and Dallas. The people are just different down there. They're more real and they're actually raised better, I think.
Well, you know, when you get into the middle of Dallas and Austin, they're very similar these days. But when you start getting outside of Dallas in East Texas and Fort Worth and all that, when you start getting outside of the cities, it's very wholesome, you know, rural areas. You know, when they have shootings or serious issues happen in Texas, and when you realize how big Texas is, like, over 900 miles across, like, it's like driving from Miami to New York. Like, that's how, you know, big Texas. People have no idea. And when you understand that if something bad happens, like a mass shooting or something like that, or, you know, 7 or 8 people get hurt in one night, it makes national news, because Texas doesn't really have those kinds of problems outside of Houston. they just really don't. But you know, in other states and other cities, things like that happen all the time and they're never reported. But in Texas, anytime something happens, it's reported, because most of the time it's just so quiet. Throughout East Texas, especially where I live, we don't have a big violent crime issue. We really don't. Mm-hmm. People are raised different. They have a different respect for one another. You don't hear about people getting shot off their motorcycles. You know, they'll pull over on the side of the road and fight. They will, you know, they'll fist fight behind the bars, but they don't, you know, they don't, people out here are not real quick to pull weapons. And it's, they just have a lot more respect for one another, even the people they don't like. And it's hard to imagine.
What do you think about the influx that's usually coming in from Cali and all that into Texas now? Is it changing the Texas culture?
It doesn't last. Everybody I see that comes out here trying to change things goes back, you know, because they're not going to change things. It's, you know, and there was a lot of that. And now you can find their videos on TikTok and YouTube, and they make videos. 5 things I hated about living in Texas. Why I moved back to California. You know, no, they're not going to change anything out here. They can go to Austin, where they have their California echo chambers. But, you know, and like parts of Dallas, but Texas is way too big. You're just not going to change it. When you realize, you know, cattle country and Amarillo and all that, the way people are raised in the panhandle and West Texas and in the swamps up in Northeast Texas. And when you get close to that Louisiana border and Southern East Texas and all that, people, you got a whole bunch of good old boys, you know, that are raised very traditionally. You know, you're not going to come here from anywhere and change it.
Saw in one of your TikTok videos, actually, because I was like totally going through all your videos because I can.
Thank you.
And I saw in one of your videos, and you were actually talking about where you live in Texas and how you can count on like one hand how many issues you have, and the fact that you can actually keep your doors unlocked where you live.
and you know, we really do. And that's not an understatement. And even me, I've been doxxed here on TikTok. I've been doxxed all over the internet, and my house and address have been plastered. And I'm not even scared to say that a lot of times we don't even lock our doors around here. Because you're not going to come through here without me knowing it. Like this community, the way it is, if you drive through here in a car nobody's seen, I'll get a phone call.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they'll be like, hey, do you know this dude driving down the street? He's headed towards your house. And that's the kind of community it is. There's one way in and one way out of the neighborhood. And if I was to tell my neighbor, no, I don't know the dude, I need you to block that road. He would block the road. He put his dually right across the road, and you're not getting back through there. It really is like that. People take care of each other out here, and somebody's mama lives across the street or down the road, and they'll call me and say, hey, I heard there's a strange vehicle prowling through your neighborhood. Will you go over there and check on mama? You know, yeah, I got you, mama. We're going there and make sure mama doing good. You know, but we take care of each other out here. We all respect one another. Yeah.
Why do you think it is
each other's business?
Why do you think it is, Gray, that you have these East and West Coast elites that they have such a problem with the culture of Texas?
You know, you talking about the elites as far as what?
As these, these uppity ups, these liberals, and I don't.
Extreme left, and this. You know what, man? They. A lot of them are misinformed. A lot of them, they hear things on the news that are untrue. They run with it. You know, I see stuff all the time where people say this or that about Texas, and it's completely false. You know, there's nothing could be further from the truth. I think that there's a lot of hate towards Texas because, you know, the people out here just don't eat shit well. They just don't. And Texas, like right now, is looking at secession. Like it's all over the news. Like it's a serious conversation. And the people of Texas have kind of, a lot of people out here have kind of put their finger up to the government at this point. And they're like, you know what? You're giving all of our money away overseas. There's taxation without representation. And we didn't sign up for that. You know what I mean? And that's the conversation. You know, they're saying, hey, they're taxing us without asking us where the money's going to go, and without even caring where the money's going to go. That's not proper representation. And, you know, when Texas was set up, it was set up as a republic. It was its own country. And interesting enough, and I'm not BSing you here, one of my great grandfathers was one of the first legislators for the Republic of Texas. And my family's been in Texas since before Texas was a country, but I had relatives that fought in the Alamo, and I had my great grandfather was at the Battle of Gonzales and fought the Mexican army to help liberate, you know, Texas to become a country. And so I know a whole lot about Texas history, and the people out here, there's a lot of people out here that have said that Texas will do a lot better on its own. We've got our own economy. We've got our own Army, Navy, Air Force. We've got our own Silicon Valley. We've got our own NASA, right? We've got our own borders with other countries and our own harbors. We've got more oil than anyone else, you know, and we're not even allowed to drill it because of federal regulations, you know.
That was douche when Texas first became a state. They had a stipulation that they could go back to their own country, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, supposedly it's in there. There's a lot of talk about that now because of what happened during the Civil War and the Union did not uphold that agreement and allow Texas to just secede at that point. But here's the thing, you know, you hear a lot of people say, yeah, they didn't let it happen in the Civil War and they wouldn't let it happen now. And what I tell people is, I mean, you heard of Brexit, you know, I mean, the people over there, they voted in Britain to leave the Union. And, you know, when they voted, they didn't have any choice. The Union didn't have any choice but to let them leave because it would have been an international incident. And if the people of Texas were to vote to leave, you know, no president's going to send an army down here and start attacking Texans and tell you you can't leave. It would be war crimes. And frankly, it was back then. if you know your history, there's a lot of people that say that Lincoln committed war crimes, but that's neither here nor there. But it would be war crimes now. If Texas voted to leave and they sent an army down here or anything like that, it would be a war crime. And that the United States would have to answer to the entire world.
And a lot of people don't know Gray, you know, because Gray's in the history. I'm in the history. Is Abraham Lincoln was actually a dictator. You know, he set martial law and against your First Amendment, everything. And,
when he went down to Carolina, they got rid of all the press, arrested everybody with the press, arrested the mayors, jailed the governors. I mean, everybody that had any power down there. And then all the troops that they killed, right? They hung their bodies on display for everybody to see, and then marched all the way across the South, taking every bit of money and you know, burning down every town and every city that they come across. You know what I mean? It was, you could never do that again. If you tried to do that, you would get the attention of the whole world.
Right.
And it would be an entire international incident. It shouldn't have been allowed back then. But it would never be allowed now. And I keep telling people, they say, man, if Texas leaves, the country won't let them do it. The country won't have a choice but to let them do it. You know, there'll be no choice in it. You know, if the people vote to leave, they're going to leave. And right now, the biggest threat to the United States is the country splitting apart. I mean, anybody that works in the government, anybody that's in the know, they'll tell you they're not worried about all these other countries as much as they're worried about the division in the United States. And that's why Biden did his speech about unity when he got elected, because he knows, everybody in the know knows that, you know, the issue is the country actually breaking apart because the political differences have gotten so big that there's no medium anymore.
Right.
There's no middle ground. All the middle ground's been chewed up, and nobody can find a resolution or peace in a middle ground. You know, I think you're going to see a lot of states talk. From what I understand, there's over 17 states or 20 something states. Last count, I think it was 22 states, and I'd have to relook, but something like 22 states are talking about it, and like 17 states are talking about getting on board with Texas. And they're talking about it being on the ballot in 2024 for the Texans to be able to vote to start a secession process. They're wanting to put it on the ballot, and it's all in the news. People are talking about it, but when it's in the news, and it only lasts for 20 seconds, and then they go to commercial, and then they come back and talk about something else. But people are, it's a big conversation out here. You know, a lot of people talking about leaving. Yeah.
Well, that is Gray right here, man. Our favorite biker, my favorite biker over on TikTok. A lot of stuff, man. Real educated on what he talks about. Real funny guy. I hope everybody goes over there and takes a look at his material. You'll bust the gut over there. But I really appreciate having you on, Gray, man. You rock it.
Absolutely.
Hey, thank you all very much for the invite. It was great to meet you, Mike. Great to meet you finally. And I do watch y'all's show all the time. I really do. And China, great to meet you over there. And hey, y'all invite me back anytime, man. I always have fun when I hang out with you guys, you know. So if you ever think I can contribute to the conversation, y'all don't hesitate to hit me up.
I will.
I'll be the one.
All right. Yeah. Hey, much love, guys. Much love.
Appreciate it.
Talk to y'all later. We're out of here right now. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Make sure you go over and check out Gray. You won't regret it, man. This is the kind of stuff you're gonna.
Yeah, hey, this is Timmy down at the Harley shop. Yeah, you came in and looked at a bike this year, and we talked. Yeah. You know, it's our end of the year savings. We got some crazy interest rates, like 1.5%, and got the regional sales managers in here. He wants to meet you personally. Says he's gonna get you a good deal today. You're gonna miss out on your dream bike if you don't come on down. Can I see you about 2:00? Yeah, does that sound good? But okay, we'll see you then. All right, come on in. Oh, you brought in your exclusive offer. Okay, all right. Well, let me see. All right, hey, look, I'm going to go. Is that the bike you want? Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. It's about 3 o'clock. I've been busy all afternoon. But I sure am glad you came in. Let's go ahead and see what the boss is. Let's see what the boss is. Say we can get you on a bike today. Yeah, you ready? All right, let's look. Okay. All right. Okay. Here's what we can do for you today if you're ready. All right. If you're ready. Now we're looking at, it's your new bike. Now, for that new bike, we're not worried about the price of it right now. Let's just go ahead and find out what kind of a down payment can you handle. Now I see you got a trade-in. Now we've got your trade-in. You bought that 3 years ago for $35,000. We're ready to give you $15,000 today. For a trade. I mean, it's about 3 years old. Yeah, we'll give you $15,000 for it. And if you can go ahead and take care of that 10% down on the bike, we're looking at about $8,000 down and about $700 amount. Can I get you to go? Are you ready to get your new bike now? Yeah? No, that's going to be about an 18% interest rate. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You got good credit. We're looking at 17%. Yeah, you got, 17%. You ready? Get your new Harley today? Come on, guys. Do better. I'm out.
And that's it for a Motorcycle Madhouse Morning Mayhem. Don't forget to visit us on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, and all major podcast platforms for all the replays of Motorcycle Madhouse.